to episode 34 of Carlene's Anime Corner, a St. John's County Public Library podcast. And today I have with me in our impromptu recording studio, Amy, who has been on before with your last episode with us was My Neighbor Totoro?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, and we have a brand new voice joining us. We have Mr. Harold George from our bookmobile service. He has come today to talk about this movie.
Hello.
Hi. So, Mr. Harold, since you have not yet been on this podcast, you want to tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do for the library?
I'm the Extension Services Manager, which, of course, the highest profile service we provide is the bookmobile. We also do special events and other outreach efforts. I've been with the library system since the dawn of time.
Truth.
And
very true.
And it's been fun. And one of the things that I love is that there's always new and interesting things happening and people coming through. And this is an example of it today.
So, well, and you're a bit of a film buff, so we're going to have...
Tiny bit.
So we're going to have a real critical voice on this podcast.
I'll try to be kind. And also, I appreciate the fact that you're getting me to watch anime that I'm interested in, but not inclined to choose as, you know, what we're going to see on the TV that night.
All right. So usually I start off by having people share what nerdy thing they've been doing since the last recording. Do you two have anything you want to share about some activity, project, fun movie you watched?
Well, while Amy thinks I'm...
yeah, staring into space there.
That's okay. So a friend of mine and I have this tradition of watching disaster films on Christmas Day. I'm not sure exactly why he started it, but it's fun. And, mm-hmm. you know, and we both grew up in the same era, so it's fun to like, hey, did you see this? Well, this past Christmas, we watched The Poseidon Adventure because it was the 50th anniversary of the release of that film.
I was going to say the original one.
The original one. The only one, in my opinion, that you should cross the street for. And I remember it was the first time as a kid that I insisted on getting to see a movie a second time. And it holds up. It has all the cheese that one would like at Christmas time, but some pretty good performances and, you know, effects.
I remember I watched that a couple years ago, and I really enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun.
I have to say, I've never seen it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Well,
not
you're
the remake
ready.
Either?
Mm-mm.
Okay. When you're ready for people drowning in a ship that's flipped upside down.
Is anyone ever really ready for that?
Every Christmas.
I would admit the Towering Inferno scared me more.
Yeah.
The Towering Inferno is probably a better movie.
Probably.
But the Poseidon Adventure, I mean, it's the all-star cast. Lots of Oscar winners were performing in it, even though, you know, it's not the best dialogue. And Shelley Winters, pardon me, was actually nominated for an Oscar and supporting actress.
Okay.
You know, and there's a lot of fun trivia.
Yes, there always is with those kinds of movies.
I have a deep fear of rogue waves. I don't think this movie would be good for me.
It could definitely create some anxiety then.
Yeah.
Hard pass.
So... and Miss Amy, have you been doing anything fun the last month or two?
So about the nerd aspect, a friend and I have been creating this board game, and it's been enormously fun. We've been doing a lot of research on St. Augustine during the British period. So getting some fun stuff and some fun information and research. I love research.
Well, today we are going to talk about maybe my absolute favorite anime movie, which I'm... sad to say, you guys don't seem to share that opinion all that much. But this movie holds a soft spot in my heart for me because it is actually the movie that got me started watching anime and has led to a 20-year obsession.
Mm.
So we are going to be talking about Spirited Away, the only animated foreign film, 2D animation foreign film, shall I say, that has won an Academy Award for Best Animated Feature. The only other foreign film that won was one of the Wallace and Gromit films from England, and that was not a 2D animation, that was stop motion. So anyway, I have a horrible theory on why Spirited Away won, mainly because Disney distributed it, so it had Disney's name on it. So people went, oh, it's Disney, and voted for it.
Well, Disney voters, too.
Yeah.
You know, the people in the organizations.
Yeah.
So, in the biz.
Yeah, I don't have a very great opinion of the people who choose the animated Academy Award winner. I don't think they have enough creativity in their souls to be doing their job.
Well, the whole voting process is weird because, like, you know, directors nominate directors, but the entire Academy votes on the actual winner. Mm-hmm. So
it's it's not animators that vote on the animated film.
Right.
It's literal. And I was really hurt when I discovered that you're not even required to watch the movie to vote on it. And I was like, no, wait a minute. Yeah. If you're voting on these things, you have to at least watch the film and not just go, oh, that's the one my kids like. So that's why I voted for it.
Or my secretary thinks I should vote for that one.
Right. Or my secretary.
It's the dirty little secret. They've tried to improve that, but.
Yeah. Well, and the animation one has always been, I felt like, the stepchild of the awards because they went ahead and they always make jokes about it, about how it's such a kid field and it's meant for children. Mm-hmm. But it's not really. Mm-hmm. A lot of the animation out there is more and more being for adults, like animated series, animated movies, between the stop motion, the CGI and all that. It's becoming more and more acceptable for an adult audience.
Was the Wallace and Gromit film that won Chicken Run?
No, that it was...
Because that's the only Wallace and Gromit movie I can think of right now.
That actually wasn't a Wallace and Gromit film. It was done by the same studio, but it's not a Wallace and Gromit film. I am going to look this up on Google real quick on my phone.
I'm familiar with the Wallace and Gromits.
I have to admit, the only movies I've watched by that studio were Shaun the Sheep and the Chicken Run. I think it was Wallace and Gromit, The Curse of the Were-Rabbit.
Okay, yeah.
So, in essence, pretty much 90% of all the films that have won the Animated Academy Award feature are Disney or Pixar, which since Pixar is a part of Disney, I don't know if you can really
separate them.
It's all Disney.
Plus, it's like, can you remember what films were actually nominated sometime? I mean...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Project Laika, Studio Laika, always gets their films nominated and they never win. And I was very sad that Kubo and the Two Strings did not win because that, I think, is one of the best examples of stop motion I have seen in years. So, soft spot for stop motion animation. But anyway, we are rabbit trailing. And I swore we were not going to rabbit trail. So, back to what we were talking about, which is Spirited Away, which is directed by Hayao Miyazaki. And it came out in 2001. It did win an Academy Award winning award. And the it was released by the Disney Studios into the U.S. Kind of a rocky relationship at times with that because Miyazaki is very, very firm about the integrity of his films not being altered for a foreign market. There's a story that I find hysterically funny. Apparently... this has never been officially verified, but people who were involved with the studio said it happened. So it's kind of one of those where it's partial rumor, partial truth, and all legend is that they went ahead and they were talking about editing one of his films, like removing sections of it to make it better, shorter, and more appealing to a Western audience and so on and so forth. And he had had this happen to one of his films before. I believe it was Nausicaä and the Valley of the Wind. They trimmed that thing down so much that it was barely recognizable to the original film. And they renamed it Warriors of the Wind, which the whole thing was an anti-war message. So, so he was not very happy. And that's why for years we did not see any Studio Ghibli films in the States. John Lasseter, though, over at Disney/Pixar, was a huge fan of Miyazaki and managed to get Spirited Away over here. I don't know if it was Spirited Away or another film. I have a feeling it was Princess Mononoke. They were talking about editing it because Princess Mononoke is a very dark film. It's a PG-13 versus the PG or G that a lot of Miyazaki's are. And they were talking about editing it, and apparently the Studio Ghibli sent a katana to the Miramax, who was releasing it, with a note that just said, no cuts.
Wow, good job.
So, as I said, this is the legend that has gone down, but it does explain some of the why it took so long to get a lot of the Studio Ghibli materials over to the States.
Well, that makes me wonder, I mean, what I mentioned to you earlier, that I had noticed there were a lot of subtitles in areas where I didn't hear or any dialogue or see any signs, and I had to look that up, and... According to my research, it says that subtitles were added in some places to help the understanding of the film, and I wonder if that was a Disney influence
or if that was
the director's.
And there is a credit for the screenwriting for the English dub of this film and probably also for the translation. They very rarely directly translate anime.
Sure.
It's a lot of times in the credits you'll see it says reversioned, and that's because... if you directly translate Japanese, it doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So particularly if you're watching a comedy with a lot of puns, because the Japanese language puns very easily. But if you do a direct translation, right. they are literally talking gibberish.
Right.
You have no idea what they're saying.
Well, and it's funny because it occurred to me, like I tried to watch a series on Netflix recently called The Empress, and it's a German series that's been audio dubbed, and the audio dubbing isn't the worst, but it's just still so distracting.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and apparently there's audio dubbing or version for this film, but I still felt like, even though it's animated and that probably would have passed, I still didn't think that that was a good idea.
I have watched this movie dubbed and subbed. I don't know. Did you watch it dubbed or subbed,
dubbed.
Amy? Dubbed. Okay. I will say the dubbing for the Studio Ghibli films is very well done.
Oh, okay. Maybe we'll go back and try that.
Because it is done by Disney. They are very good at that, and they particularly wrote the script to match up with the mouse as much as possible. Mm. I will also say that Japanese in general, I think, is an easier language to dub with mouth movements because I have watched some French cartoons too, and it doesn't matter how well the dubbing is done, it still just doesn't quite work. But the Japanese, it seems to work pretty well.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So in general, I will watch most things subtitled. I just chose to watch this one dubbed this time because I flip back and forth because I really don't mind either way. But yeah, I think the dubbing particularly on these films was very well done because they had very high level voice actors who have been in the business for years doing it. And later on, as Miyazaki got more popular, because Spirited Away was still his kind of his introduction to the States in many ways, there was an English dub of My Neighbor Totoro that came out earlier on VHS tape from Fox Studios. But I think that was pretty much the only thing that we had until Spirited Away. And I think that as time went on, they got more and more big names to do some of the dubbing. Like you and I, Amy, watched Howl's Moving Castle.
Yes.
They had Christian Bale doing one of the voices in there.
Oh, cool.
So they started getting some of the bigger actors once he got more and more popular.
Actually, you just reminded me, because I read about it, the English dub version of Spirited Away was Suzanne Plachette's last film.
Yes.
She did the voice of she did the voice of the witch, I think.
Yes, she did Yubaba.
Well, most people probably know her as the wife of Bob Newhart in the Bob Newhart Show.
Okay, yeah,
yep.
I remember that.
So, yeah, lots to learn.
They got, as I said, they got veterans of the field to come in and do this recording for the English dub for this.
Well, this makes me want to watch the English dub version just to see if I respond to it differently or not.
It could be, because there was an anime I watched with for this podcast, actually, years ago, called Godzilla Singular Point, and I watched that one completely in Japanese, and then I rewatched, it's 12-episode series, and then I rewatched it completely in English, and I was like, there were two very different ideas, sort of. Like, they had a different way of phrasing things in the English than the Japanese, which led to a different understanding of the film. So it was very interesting to watch it that way.
And it'd be worth a try.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's go ahead, and I'm going to jump into a quick summary of the film, because we have been talking about this like everybody has seen Spirited Away, but obviously you two have never seen this film before this.
Nope.
So,
some anime stuff.
Yep. So we can't assume that. Spirited Away is a story of 10-year-old Chihiro, who winds up in a, I guess, fantasy realm, kind of parallel to our reality, and she winds up working in a bathhouse for a witch named Yubaba, and she has to save her parents who have been turned into pigs, and she has various interactions with different spirit creatures and magical folk while she does this. It is very much a fairy tale. So real quick, before we go into a whole bunch of spoiler stuff, what would rating, like out of 5 stars, would you give this movie?
I hate to say it. I'd give it 3.
3?
I'd probably give it 3 as well. 3? I'm not saying I didn't. I don't think it's a bad film. I'm just not sure that I got into it.
Okay. Yeah, I was a little surprised, Amy, that you were a little colder on this film because you really enjoyed My Neighbor Totoro,
yep.
which has a little bit of that same magical realism and...
I think it's the plot line on this one for me, which we can get into bit later. But because I normally like Miyazaki and Studio Ghibli. I mean, I haven't had one that never really hit me right. And this one just...
I have to admit, I have a few of his that haven't hit me right from Studio Ghibli, but this was not one of them. This is one of my all-time favorites. I think I've watched it like 20 times.
For me, maybe the problem was is that I've been expecting a horse all this time because I kept getting the movie confused with Spirit. which I will watch at some time, and you can have a laugh at my expense. But I'm thinking maybe in my head back somewhere, I still was hoping for a horse.
And you got a dragon instead.
Yeah, which was pretty cool.
Kind
of horse-like.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well,
without the legs.
Eastern dragons are very different looking than Western ones.
Yes.
So, yeah, I would say this is definitely a 5-star for me. As I said, this movie actually got me started watching anime. I saw it probably in 2002 when they did the VHS release in the States. I was babysitting. And I was like, oh, it's an animated movie we haven't seen yet. And I brought it over, and the kids lost interest within the first 10 minutes. So I put them down for a nap, and I watched the movie. Mm-hmm. They were really young. They were like 4 and 5 or something like that. And at this point, I kind of I took the changeover from 2D animation to 3D animation very hard. As in, I did not watch any animated movies for about 5-6 years from Disney or Pixar, because I was so upset about this. There's still movies from that era, like WALL-E, that I have not seen, because I kind of just stopped watching them. And then I discovered that there was this entire country that still did 2D animation, the classic style, and they had a gazillion things for adults, kids, all ages, and that's how I started tracking down and watching anime. Mm-hmm. I will say that none of them have ever equaled Miyazaki as far as detail and beauty in his movies, I think. But
he's an artist.
He is an artist. Although I do have some other favorite directors like Satoshi Kon, Mamoru Hosoda, but he is definitely an artist and is top of his field.
Yep.
It's very hard to find anybody better than him. Yes.
Well, I was going to say one of the things I did like about, I think I keep saying that I want more from it, and I'm not sure what I mean by that. The movie lengthwise was fine, but there were some cool characters in it. I mean, I really liked the character of the guy who worked down in the boiler room.
Yes.
Oh, Kamaji.
Basically, the six arms and the two legs.
He was a Spider-Man, pretty much.
See, at first I thought he was an octopus, and I was like, that seems out of place.
No, I think he's meant to be more like designed after a spider.
He is.
But with his mustache and just sort of his style, I kept thinking, like if I watched The Yellow Submarine, he would show up somewhere in it. Like, he struck me as like that kind of style. He was cool.
Yeah. Just to let our listeners know, we are now going to go into full spoiler, so we're going to talk in detail about this plot.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. Kamaji is a pretty well-known character from it. But do we want to start with talking about some of our favorite characters, or talking more about the plot, since you guys had some...
I like both characters a lot. If I don't connect to a character, sometimes I just don't connect to a film. And in this case, for me, there really wasn't characters that I connected with, and there wasn't plot that I connected with. And I think that's perhaps the root of my
dissatisfaction.
Yes.
Your madness.
My madness.
The most interesting character for me in the whole film was the stink spirit.
Yes. I love that moment.
Because he represented a lot of things in that movie. Like, first of all, like, at one point I said, the stink spirit is basically like a river that just like came into the building and dumped all the stuff on the bottom of the riverbed.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I love about Miyazaki, is that he has some very definite themes that run through all his movies. He usually has a very anti-war message, which doesn't really come into play in this one, but it has in other films like Nausicaa. He also usually has a pretty strong environmental message, which we saw that in My Neighbor Totoro.
And we see this in this
one,
too.
And we see that in this one, particularly with the river spirit, because also with Haku's storyline. Mm-hmm. There's also that, because Haku the dragon, he is actually a river spirit, because he's the god of the Kohaku River. But they filled in his river and built apartment buildings. So he has no home anymore.
Was that where all those rocks were towards the beginning of the film, when they were walking through the landscape?
No, the Kohaku River was in Chihiro's hometown, because she fell into it. And she makes, and that's when she remembers Haku's real name, is that he's the Kohaku River, because she fell into the river, and that's what she remembers, is that he actually rescued her when she was really little. But I love the fact that he's making a statement not only about the pollution of the rivers, but the fact that humans have actually gotten rid of whole rivers that used to be a part of their community.
Yep. And some of the research that I did, they mentioned that where Haku's river has been reclaimed and he does not have a home to return to, which leads to Miyazaki's familiar environmental theme of Modern technology continues to encroach upon nature and destroys natural habitats, which...
Hello, this is Future Carlene. While I was editing this podcast, I realized that Miss Amy had done a whole long quote, and we forgot to say where she got it from. So here's the podcast version of a footnote. She was quoting from the article Spirited Away, Film of the Fantastic and Evolving Japanese Folk Symbols by Noriko Ryder. Anyway, you'll hear me a little bit later because I got a second footnote for this podcast.
It's true.
Yeah. Well, and also in Japan, in some ways, that's even more of a thing if you go back to the older, more traditions, because Shinto religion has spirits that, like, the river is a spirit, the tree is a spirit, kami. And by getting rid of the river, they're also kind of getting rid of their past and their spiritual heritage. So I think that's also what this film talks to a little bit, is the lost spiritual heritage of the traditional Japanese religions.
So now that's making me think about one of the things that kind of struck me is when, what's her name?
Shihiro, our hero.
When she and her parents are going first initially through that tunnel and they wind up in this field, and her father's first response is, oh, clearly this is an abandoned theme park. And I'm like, what?
What?
But that field, that lost space, I mean, that's harkening back to the idea of losing the spirits and the nature, and it's just this tiny abandoned location.
So in the, I forget if it was 80s or 90s or maybe both decades, Japan had a huge bubble economy. It seemed like everything they touched was making money. And so they built a ton of stuff like theme parks. It was an epic era for anime, music, all this stuff. And then all of a sudden, the bubble popped. And they pretty much have not come out of the recession since. That was caused by
that. The economy's been very flat for like 20 years.
Yeah, and it doesn't help that their birth rate is pretty much non-existent. They're having a lot of their elderly, the non-working population now outnumbers the working population. So Japan has a lot of issues like that that do get reflected in a lot of anime. There is an anime, there's a lot of anime that for a while was coming out that was extolling the virtues of let's move to the country and have kids because they're trying to get people to move out of the cities back to these abandoned towns and have kids.
Right.
Yeah. But one of the effects of that was these abandoned theme parks. So a lot of times I've seen this happen in multiple anime where they find like an abandoned theme park, or there's used to be some kind of entertainment thing and it's gone now. And I just, so it actually isn't that odd for the father to just go, oh, it's an abandoned theme park.
But what's also interesting, though, is now that it's an abandoned theme park that was taken over by spirits. It's like, they reclaimed the space.
Except for, I don't know if the spirits reclaimed it, or if that was a possible entrance to their world always, and the theme park got built there. So it's just one of those things where the real world and the spiritual world kind of meshed at some point.
Right. But now I'm seeing it in a different light now that we're talking about the
I see this film a lot through the idea of Irish mythology.
Yes.
With the Tuatha De Danann living in an alternate world that is literally parallel to ours. And if at certain times people can walk through a doorway and wind up in their world and kind vice versa.
Like Stranger Things with the
upside down.
One of the things that really struck me about it is when her parents were initially eating all that feast, I was like, don't eat the fairy food.
Don't eat the fairy food. That is the first thing every child learns is don't eat the fairy food.
Yeah, I saw her parents doing that. I'm like, I know where this movie is going.
Well, and they seem so like, I mean, and I don't know how much of this is indicative of culture and so forth, but I was like, well, these parents are just so dismissive of this child right away. Mm. Made me think of like 1950s movies where the kids are like in the corner.
Chihiro was a little bit on the whiny side as a kid, I will say, at the beginning, because
she was adjusting to moving.
She was not happy. Yeah, she was definitely not happy about moving, not happy about anything that was going on.
A new school.
New school, new this, which, to be honest, I was 9 when I moved to Florida, and I left all my friends, my school, my climate, my house. And that was a hard move, because we moved in the fall, so we were headed right into winter. So from Illinois to Florida. So I spent an entire winter looking for snow, and I think there's still a part of me looking for that every winter, which is why I don't like Christmas season here much.
Because so, it's connected to that weird sense.
Yeah, that weird relocation. I got everything changed overnight pretty much.
One of the things I did like about that, though, now that I'm reflecting on it some more, is that the entire movie was about that transition, about her going from a new location and even going through the tunnel to this new fairy world. I mean, it's a transition for her.
And that's what I liked about that is as this movie goes on, you see Chihiro gain courage, gain the ability to speak out and be listened.
Right.
And she's not just sitting in a corner crying anymore. She's
not passive.
She's taking the train. She's going to solve the problem.
She almost forgot about her parents, it seemed, because she had other issues to address first.
Yeah, like she had a whole list of things she needed to take care of her survival, too. And she wasn't depending on them anymore.
And that's one of the things that kind of actually disturbed me about it, is that she was taking on so much responsibilities for a 10-year-old. And that seems to be a theme in a lot of the movies that are geared towards kids, is kids stepping up and parenting their parents. And that bothers me.
So I just recently rewatched for the first time in like 50 years The Railway Children, the 1971 version. And all those, that makes me think of all those British books where it's the kids that save everything.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's like, is it a lesson like to help kids become resilient? But you're right, kids having to take on a lot doesn't seem very fair.
No.
Well,
but they always do it well.
What I,
because they're imaginative.
Japan's culture has a lot of issues. Let's put it that way. But one of the things I've always kind of liked about their culture is that a lot of times, like the little kindergartners and stuff, they'll walk to school their own. But Japan, because of the community spirit in Japan, that's like the entire neighborhood like keeps an eye out for these kids.
Right.
And they know that, oh, my neighbor's kid is walking to school. I'll check out the window, make sure they're doing okay on their way, and so on. They've actually designed their intersections in some places with little flags that the kids can pick up. And as they're walking across the road, they hold these flags up.
Like St. Augustine Beach.
Yeah. Well, I heard one theory that I thought was kind of interesting, that Japan doesn't have as many sidewalks for pedestrians. You actually share the road a lot more with cars. But because of that, cars are way more aware of pedestrians and don't hit people as much because they know that there are people using the roadways too.
But I think, again, back to the idea of you know, these children taking on too much, is that with the independence and walking, there are adults who are looking out for them. In this film, she had nobody. She was saving everybody except for Granny kind of helped her out.
Granny helped her out, Zaniba. And I think Lynn, in some ways, kind of took her. Lynn was the bossy older sister.
Yeah, that's who I was thinking of, yeah.
But like, ultimately didn't have any power herself. I mean, the idea
but she did help.
She did help. But part of what I think subconsciously kind of disturbed me about it is that she was on her own.
Yeah.
She was saving everybody.
Well, it's funny, like the Octo guy, like even though he was like, go away, I have no job for you, blah, blah, blah. At one point you see him like reaching over and putting a blanket over her while she sleeps.
Well, and he pretty much saves her from being thrown out because he stands up to Lynn and says, she needs a job. And Lynn's like, why would I get help a human? And he says, she's my granddaughter. He like automatically made her family.
Right.
And I find that fascinating because Kamaji is a very interesting character. He feels, I don't know, because he feels gruff and mean. But he's actually deep down inside nice. And I think that's a lot of Miyazaki's characters. You sometimes find that.
And I wonder if Haku realized that because he sent her to him.
To Kamaji.
Right.
Yeah.
Knowing that he would be kind of the gateway.
I think, like, just in general, all the different the idea of spirits and ghosts and things in the Japanese folklore, they're so very different necessarily from how we would conceptualize them. It makes them interesting, but No Face?
What's his name?
No Face. Okay. No Face was such an interesting character. First of all, at first, I was like, oh, No Face is being helpful. But then I was like, or is No Face taking advantage of a situation just to get entry? And then my comparison was, No Face is that friend that you finally decide to invite along to a party. And then you're like, man, why did I bring this person?
So No Face, I found a fascinating character because I always saw him as being the lonely guy on the outside. Nobody will let him in. Nobody will be nice to him. They're all shunning him. And Chihiro, I think, in some ways feels sorry for him, although she does think he's a customer at the bathhouse, which is originally why she lets him in. But you don't.
And he helps her.
And he helps her because he wants to help her. He wants to be. He's like, she was nice to me and I want to help her. What I find fascinating is No Face doesn't really start showing horrible qualities until he swallows the one frog guy.
Well, you see, and I'm thinking, was it the frog
that did
it?
I think he picks up the personality of the people he's around. Because in the bathhouse, he's a terrible being. Like, gluttony and just... And he thinks he can buy everything.
And the frog was cute on his own, but if you amplify the powers and size of the frog, then maybe it's not a good thing.
Yeah, and also after he leaves the bathhouse, after Chihiro gets him to throw up everything, and he winds up at Zeniba's place, he's again that sweet, calm spirit. It's like he reflects his surroundings.
And I think part of it is, though, that when he was being gluttonous and everything, it wasn't so much that he was... gluttonous on his own, but it was a response to the people who were fawning over him for the gold.
Yeah.
Whereas Zeniba saw who he was and was able to appreciate that. There's sort of almost a self-hatred, I felt, where he was just constantly giving them what they wanted and really diminishing on the inside a little bit.
Yeah, it's like he learned to be... he learned through the bathhouse that I can get what I want if I give them gold.
Right.
And instead of actually making a good friendship, he just learned how to buy friendship.
Right.
So the bathhouse is, it's an interesting place.
And this is also a spirit that couldn't speak, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, until he swallowed the frog. He got the voice from the frog. But after he spits up the frog again, he doesn't have a voice, which is why I think the frog's character was influencing him and magnifying his that personality.
You know what character I liked least in the film? The giant baby.
Oh, my God. That giant baby was so annoying.
Yep.
Bo. Yeah. He was much cuter as a mouse when he was just going,
yes.
Yep.
Yes, agreed. Definitely not my favorite character.
But he was, again, another character that grew up.
Yeah.
Because Yababa kept treating him like a baby, wouldn't let him go out, constantly giving him everything he wanted. And then Zeniba turns him into the mouse, and he goes on this adventure with Chihiro, and he learns how to be helpful and see another way of life. And so when he comes back, he actually stands up to his mom and says, no, you can't be like that. As I said, there's a lot of growth in this film when you start looking for it, which is what I think the theme of this film is, gaining your courage, your confidence, and growing through your experiences. If you look at it... Because her parents were turned into pigs, they never grow in this film. They never change.
Mm-mm, they don't have the opportunity to.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Haku.
Haku?
I did enjoy him. However, one of the other issues that I had with the film, and it's kind of the issue that I had with Howl's Moving Castle, is that there's a whole bunch of story and depth to Haku that we only see through her eyes, and a lot of the films are starting to feel like this enigmatic male character that is really the primary focus of the story, but we're only seeing it through the young female eyes. I don't know. There's starting to be a theme that I'm noticing with some of the Miyazaki films, and it just could be either the stories that he chooses or how he just, I don't know.
Or how he chooses to portray the story.
Correct.
Because Howl's Moving Castle was an adaptation of a book.
Right.
This was an original script by Miyazaki. It's not an adaptation. But you kind of have, not quite the same, it's more the opposite, I think, in Arrietty, because that's a retelling of The Borrowers.
Yes. Mary Norton book.
But
The Borrowers is about the little people?
Yeah.
That was my favorite series.
Studio Ghibli did a retelling of that called The Secret World of Arrietty.
Oh, cool. Now, did Miyazaki do a Millennium Actress?
No, that was Satoshi Kon.
Okay, because that was the other anime I watched. And
yes.
I think that you could sort of say the same thing. The movie, it's called Millennium Actress, but it's really like you think she's the main character, but the main character really is the journalist who's interviewing her, following her around.
Back to Great Gatsby.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, Gatsby
who's the story
isn't
really
the main
about?
Nope.
Yep.
It's about Nick.
Yep.
Haku, I think, in some ways, is meant to be mysterious because he himself doesn't know who he is.
True.
So he can help her with the world of the bathhouse, but he can't help her too much because he is pretty much owned and controlled by Yababa.
Yes, very much so.
And at the very end, he's not anymore. He's free to make his own choices, except go home, because he can't.
There is no home.
So he's still an orphan in the world of the spirits. He doesn't have a place. So he probably, I'm going to guess, he's still going to work at the bathhouse at the end, but I think he's going to have more choice on what he does.
And I think it's kind of funny that, like, bathhouse culture is such a big thing in Japan, mm-hmm. that naturally the spirits want their own bathhouse as
right.
well.
Or mm-hmm.
They can cleanse and be communal in their own way.
Yeah, be entertained. And because one of the things you saw them setting up at the bathhouse wasn't actually a bath. It was cushions around like a fire pit where they'd have tea set up and everything. So it was also a socialization thing where they could get together and socialize. My favorite scene in this entire movie was when she's taking the train.
Yes. I like the train too.
Yes. I felt the train was a nice break in action because you have that high drama moment with Haku being attacked by the Shinigami paper things. Hello. Okay, I'm back again. This is my second footnote that I promised you earlier. So here I was mistaken in what I said. I said Shinigami, which is actually a personification of death or a death spirit, most commonly found in animes like Bleach or Death Note. What I meant to say was Shikigami, which are portrayed here more as magical tools that Zeniba goes ahead and uses to make paper come alive and do her will, but I have seen as actual spirits in other anime, such as Natsumi Yujinso. And now, back to our program. And then, you know, he's bleeding all over the place.
Yeah,
there's
those
all
things.
This action.
I want to talk about those, too.
And then she gets these train tickets, and then there's just this quiet train ride for about, I don't know, 2-3 minutes.
It was lovely.
And it's just, it's one
and
of the things where Miyazaki does.
Just on
does,
top of the water, which
yeah.
I thought was interesting.
Yeah, and I love the fact the entire, it rains hard enough that the entire world is flooded right now, and it's just the train tracks are barely above the water.
Yep.
And it's just, it's a very, it's almost more dreamlike than the whole rest of the movie in many ways.
So what did you just call the paper creatures again?
Shinigami. I think I heard them called that at one point. I can't remember where.
I kept thinking of, what, Death by a Thousand Paper Cuts?
Yes.
Yes. And how that one that managed to sneak in was the source of a lot of problems.
Yeah.
Yep. In some ways, Zeniba wasn't.
So basically, I thought they were birds at first, and then they turned into paper and back and forth.
No, they were paper originally, I think. They were just animated paper.
Oh, okay. They just looked like birds.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I guess she was just trying to reclaim her seal, but she was an interesting character, too.
She is, because she
is. That's the witch twin.
Yeah, because Zeniba is Granny, who lives off in the country and does her spinning and quiet stuff. Yababa is kind of like the city twin who runs this giant bathhouse, has the gold and the jewels and everything. And they look exactly alike, but their attitudes are very different in some ways. But when we're introduced to Zeniba, it's like she's this terrible person who just tried to kill Haku and all this stuff. And it sounds like, you know, there's like this whole war going on between the two. And then you wind up at her cottage and it's just calm.
She's not the evil witch.
She's not at all. Which always made me wonder what, other than stealing her seal, why she attacked Haku so thoroughly. Because she did nearly kill him.
And especially with him as a river spirit, like, did she know who he really was? Because she didn't seem like the sort of woman who would be attacking a river spirit.
I wonder if part of it wasn't because Haku was so under control of her sister that it was, in a way, attacking her sister directly.
Right. Like, he was the henchman, kind of. Speaking of the henchmen, what was up with the three green bouncing heads?
I have no idea. I have
nothing?
No idea.
There's no Japanese tradition of three green bouncing heads or anything like that?
If there is, I have not run into it yet.
They were disturbing. They were very disturbing.
See, and I just was like, oh, that's weird. Okay, moving on.
No.
Right. Well, that's what I was saying. There are definitely elements of story and spirit that you're not going to see in too many other places.
Yeah.
Right.
Honestly, I think, and you sort of touched upon it, Amy, I think what I wanted more from was to be more like, I wanted to feel the main character more, perhaps. Or like, her story was the least interesting part of it for me.
Agreed.
Okay.
But, I mean, the adventure she went on, and maybe the whole idea was that she's an easy person to impress your own spirit and feelings upon because of that.
So, I guess I watched this movie very much in the vein of, it is a fairy tale.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She has certain quests she has to succeed on. She has certain tasks she has to complete. It's very much, despite all of the Japanese trappings of it, I think its roots are very much European mm-hmm. fairy tale mm-hmm. once you get down to it.
You must As I mentioned, I mentioned the Irish
connection with like the Tuatha De Danann and going into a different world type idea. That was kind of the feeling I got watching it.
And witches are always sending people off on tests.
Like Baba Yaga yeah. and all of that.
And Yababa made me think of Baba Yaga yeah. because in a lot of the Baba Yaga fairy tales, when the girl shows up, they have to get...
Baba Yaga? I don't know this character.
Oh, Russian witch who eats children.
She's fun.
Wow.
She's amazing. I loved her fairy tales when I was a kid. Her house is a... Uh-huh. Her house stands on chicken legs.
Uh-huh.
And she actually calls to her house to like squat down so she can get inside it. Yeah. She flies around in a giant mortar and pestle.
Yeah.
She eats children.
Yeah. She's kind of my hero.
Yeah. She's Baba Yaga, man. She is
what
amazing.
What exactly about Baba Yaga appeals to you so much?
She is her own person and she doesn't apologize for it.
No.
Oh, wow.
And the thing is if you do a good job working for her, she will reward you.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorites was stories by her is pretty much a Cinderella story. They go ahead and the stepmother sends the child of her dead husband who is from a previous marriage. And she's like the perfect child. She's beautiful. She's gorgeous. She outshines her stepsisters. Well, they put out all the fires in the house and they tell her, okay, you have to go get fire from Baba Yaga because she's the only one who has a coal that can relight the fires in our house. And uh-oh. This girl winds up working for Baba Yaga, but she has a totem from her mother, a doll, that will come to life and help her do all these crazy chores that Baba Yaga has for her. And in the end, Baba Yaga is like, I can't, you are doing such a good work. And how are you doing this? And the girl finally tells her, well, I have this gift from my mother. And that kind of freaks Baba Yaga out because the girl is protected by the love of her mother, even though her mom's dead. And she goes ahead and she says, and she has a fence around her yard with skulls that have flames in them. And she tells her to take one of the skulls with fire home to her stepmother and stepsisters. And when she gets there... the flames come out and burn all our stepmother and stepsisters to death.
So there's sort of a Cinderella vibe here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In a very twisted way.
But that is one of my favorite Baba Yaga stories. But there's other ones.
Wow.
The Little Hunchback Horse is another one where Baba Yaga shows up. I read a lot of Russian fairy tales as a kid.
This is cool.
They were very dark.
Well, you know, you talk about the influence of Western fairy tales. I thought the witches, you know, both, you know, the main witch and her twin... they actually reminded me of like little old Italian grannies more than anything yeah. that I would imagine yeah. I'd see yeah. in Japan.
Yeah, they were definitely very Western. Mm-hmm. I forget. I was reading something about Spirited Away ages ago, and I can't remember where it was. But it was supposed to. But one of the theories was that the reason why the witches are very Western, particularly Yababa, who runs the bathhouse. Is because that is showing the materialism and the death of the Japanese culture brought by Western culture to Japan, which I am a little iffy on that interpretation. I also just think that probably Miyazaki and Japan has always had a stream of kind of Western influences.
Oh, sure.
Because Castle in the Sky mm-hmm. is very much Italian looking. If you look at the scenery and stuff, he had a thing for small Italian cars, which is why when he did the Lupin the Third movie, Lupin drove a Fiat.
Mm-hmm.
And they're driving an Audi. And you pointed out earlier yep, that the dad is driving an Audi.
We both
for your listeners,
one.
Amy and I just got wide-eyed because we're like, hold on a minute. Because one of the things we both notice is that her parents are driving an Audi.
Uh-huh. Which is not which a Japanese is, vehicle.
Which, that's a very specific choice as opposed mm-hmm. to just let's throw an Audi in.
Yeah,
so.
Well, and it very distinctly had the symbol on yes. the back of the car, so it was definitely a choice to make that an Audi. Yes.
And so that's because, is it Miyazaki who's the big car fan?
I don't know if he's a huge car fan, but he definitely pays attention to European cars.
Interesting.
Because he's, as I said, he used to drive a Fiat, and mm-hmm. that's why Lupin the Third in Castle Cagliostro has the yellow Fiat, because it was based on his car.
Well, it's neat. I mean, that's the thing that's cool about any movie, are the little things that directors will put into mm-hmm. films that are probably meant yeah. for very few people to notice other mm-hmm. than themselves.
Right.
Do you guys have any final thoughts you want to share about this movie? Other than Chihiro is a bit of a blank character.
Well, I would say don't not go see it, so to speak. Don't not rent it or borrow it from the library. Yes, you can do that.
Yes, we do actually have this movie in the library.
Because it does have so many interesting characters, and that's one of the pluses of animated films in general, is the liberties that you can take with animation. Yes.
I think what drew me into this film so hard the first time I watched it was the fact it was so very different than anything else, because it was pulling a lot on Japanese culture, but it had enough of that Western fairy tale feel that it didn't feel like it was alienating completely.
A lot. I mean, the frog. I wanted to see more of the frog. I imagine just because how can one little frog turn a spirit into such an awful character?
As far as merchandising goes, I think the soot sprites are the things that have taken the world by storm.
Which one is that?
The little tiny soot things that come out and carry
the soots.
Charcoal.
Yeah.
By the way, when she's feeding them that little star-shaped stuff, that's actually a Japanese candy.
Oh, cool.
It's called confetto.
Yeah, I can't believe I didn't remember that.
I've had some. It's pretty much sugar rock candy. In the shape of little stars.
Nice.
So, but yeah, I had some, a friend gave me some of that for Christmas, and I was like, yes, I have Spirited Away candy.
What was it they were doing battle with? I'm totally blanking now. There was like a little creature or something that came in.
Oh, that black sludge?
Yeah, that's it.
That was inside of Haku, wasn't it?
Yeah, the little slug
thing. That was the spirit.
And they're soot sprites, is that what they're called?
Yeah, that's what they're commonly called.
Wait a minute, what is it the soot sprites? Oh, they're bringing pieces of coal.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Which apparently are really heavy, so it must be like a special kind of coal, because coal is not that heavy.
Mm-mm. And apparently the soot sprites, you know, once they get started, they can't stop, or they collapse under the weight of the coal.
Yes.
See, there's a whole movie right there, the soot sprites. They're the minions.
Well, and those are actually completely invented by Miyazaki. They're not a traditional Japanese thing. They show up in My Neighbor Totoro as well.
And so are the soot sprites characters you can buy at a toy store?
Definitely on Etsy. People make them a lot out of yarn and stuff. Okay. I had little computer decals that you could put on your laptop of them a while ago.
And by soot, we are talking about dirt, dust,
coal dust. Yeah. Coal dust. They're made out of coal dust with little arms and legs, and they're just really cute. And they save Chihiro's shoes and clothes for her and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Even though I wasn't a big fan of the film, I would say you should see it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. If anything, just because it's beautiful.
Yeah. Yes.
Yes, it is. I mean, he's
any last thoughts, Amy?
I think for me, the biggest thing is I wish he had focused more on her story instead of introducing these other characters with their own tantalizing backstories that kind of distracted you from what was going on. So, yeah, I'm just wishing he put more thought into her and more focus on what some of the stuff that she was going through.
Okay. So, like, more on the backstory of Haku and Lin and...
Or almost less in that regard.
Or less.
Just to not distract the viewer so much. Like, that. I think that was an unnecessary plot line.
You didn't like the way she kind of like forgot her parents halfway through the movie in some ways.
Mm-mm, or just added a little bit more depth to her.
Okay. So my last thing is I found out apparently if you go to the Studio Ghibli Park, they recently opened in Japan, which has like a giant warehouse type thing with displays and so on. And then you go outside and there's like a whole park you literally walk around in, and there's statues from all the different movies and everything.
Fun.
Yes. So melding that nature and everything that Miyazaki likes. There's apparently an entire recreation of Yababa's office from the bathhouse there.
Oh, that sounds really neat.
Which with all the detail that's in her office,
yes,
that's got to be insane.
Of detail. Yeah.
So.
And the way, as a witch, she of course flies, but I like the way she flies.
She turns into a weird bird thing.
Yeah, she turns into a weird bird thing. So that would be interesting to see. Mm-hmm. So I think I wouldn't say I didn't like the movie. I would say that I didn't connect to it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I'm glad I saw it.
Same.
Well,
it makes me want to see other films by that same director.
Oh, he's so good.
Yeah.
He is very good. There, I have a long list of recommendations. Actually, if you like him, try out Isao Takahata. It was Miyazaki's partner. He died a few years ago. But he did a film called The Tale of Princess Kaguya. It took him over 10 years to make.
Wow.
The film is done entirely in watercolors.
Oh.
Wow.
It is beautiful. It is a traditional Japanese fairy tale that he retold.
That sounds like something that could drive a person mad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. This was like the project of his life, pretty mm-hmm. much.
And who was the director again of Millennial Actress?
Satoshi Kon.
Okay.
Satoshi Kon. He died young of, forget if it was kidney or liver cancer, but he died in his 30s. So he did not make very much stuff, unfortunately.
Well, but I highly recommend Millennial Actress as well.
Yeah.
Here's my plug.
Oh, so. And my plug is for the Mysterious Cities of Gold.
You can't buy that. The only way anybody can see that is if they raid your house.
I'm just saying, if you have the opportunity, you should watch it.
Is this a film you own?
No, it's an entire anime series that was a co-production between France and Japan, dealing with ancient Inca, Mayan? Mm-hmm. Inca, I think. Yeah, one of those. Inca or Mayan civilization, but also with the fact that apparently they have little robot birds that fly.
Yeah, but it was about Spanish exploration. But anyway,
this
is the episode I would like to do with Carlene, but she won't let me because nobody else can watch it, apparently.
Yeah, no, this series, I can't find it streaming. I can't find it to buy. It is So I'm glad you lent it to me because it is amazing. And if I ever do find it, I do want to buy it. They did a sequel. Did you know that?
I did. I don't want to watch it.
Okay.
I'm afraid.
So anyway.
Sorry.
So our plugs are Millennium Actress.
And the Mysterious Cities of Gold.
Mysterious Cities of Gold, if you can find it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for saying that right. I kept saying Millennial Actress. That's a whole different movie.
Thank you, Mr. Harold and Miss Amy, for joining us. And I really had a great time discussing Spirited Away with you. It's fun to see it from somebody else's viewpoint. Because, as I said, I fell hard for this film when it came out. It became one of my favorites instantly. It's pretty much up there with My Neighbor Totoro. I think I've bought it like 4 times now because they keep coming out with different editions. It's like I had my old DVD, I had my Disney Blu-ray, I got my G-Kids updated Blu-ray, and then they came out with the Steelbook edition. So of course I had to buy that one.
I understand how that goes.
So I think the only movie I might have bought more is My Neighbor Totoro. And listeners, if you guys have any thoughts or comments about Spirited Away you would like to share, you can email me at the email address that's in our show notes. And if you have any recommendations for anything for us to watch. And next month I should be back with Zoe, so that'll be exciting. She always brings a lot of energy and fun to the show. Mm-hmm. Yes, Zoe is fun. So, bye.
Ciao.
Toodles.